Let's talk.
John Brown. We are finally getting out of January. There'll be a huge sigh of relief amongst most of you. But for those of us who used to play the noble game badly, it is a very exciting time of year because this time of year, the end of January, beginning of February, means only one thing. And that one thing is the impending approach of the Six Nations. And if you have a rugby bent, it's the most wonderful time of the year. Here to tell us a little bit about attacking the space inside rugby's tactical and data revolution is rugby journalist Sam Lana. Sam, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me on.
The pleasure is all mine. Do we find you, somewhere on a muddy touchline in the Bank of England in Roehampton, just lining up that say, well, the grass is only about 3/4 of an inch and it should be 2/3 of an inch?
Not quite. I'm in rugby league territory, actually. I'm up in Yorkshire.
Good grief.
I know. I'm away from where all the action's happening.
You're skirting somewhere near Oral, are you, or something like that?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. In Hingham Reach territory.
Now, this is your first book, but you've written about this on several times before. Because you've written for the Rugby Press.
Yes. Yeah. I've been doing that from more or less 10 years now. And this idea was at least 6 years in the brewing. But really, as a kid, I was obsessed with books and writing books. And so it's really been the best part of 30 years, I say, in the works.
Now, for those who, know a little bit about the game, because it can be very confusing, the game of union, let's face it. For those, who follow association football, I mean, it's pretty easy to work out if you're offside. If you can't work offside, then some twonk in a room doing VAR will tell you that you are offside. However, one of the buzzwords, because rugby has changed, and if you go on YouTube and you see sort of a late 70s, early 80s game featuring, Billy Beaumont and the England rugby team, I mean, talk about a game for all shapes and sizes. It is unrecognisable from the full throttle game, the international game we enjoy today. And one of the mantras you've heard, or two, getting across the gain line and attacking the space. And for those of us, again, who are trying to pull our socks off most of the time, these sound great when they're bandied around. We haven't got the foggiest idea what they actually mean.
Yes. So let's do gain line first.
Yes,
so
please.
If you imagine a line across the pitch from where the ball is, if you get over the gain line, you get past that line. So you move towards your opposition's line, which really is one of the fundamental goals of rugby. Obviously, you can only move, you can move backwards, but as an attack, you want to move forwards. You want to keep progressing forwards. And by getting over the gain line, you keep doing that. You impact the defence as well, which makes it much harder to defend if the attack is moving forward. So that's getting over the gain line.
Yep.
And then attacking the space, obviously the name of the book as well. This is targeting where the space is on the pitch. So we see this to a certain extent in football and in other kind of team sports like this, is you want to run to where the defenders aren't. But then the defenders know that, and so they put themselves where it's most advantageous to run and force you to run where it's least advantageous to go.
Here's another one, going down the channels. I mean, we're not talking about small boats and the French. So what is going down the channels?
Yes, so if you imagine, usually this is off a scrum or off a line out, defenders who are not involved in the scrum or the line out, it's a difficult job because you're defending a lot of space. And obviously, as we said, the attack want to run into that. So if you imagine each defender's probably got 3 or 4 metres to their left, 3 or 4 metres to their right, and that's the channel that they're defending. So if you run down that channel, you run either at the player or into that space. And if you were like me, a not very good tackling fly half, That was a terrifying prospect to have someone running into your channel.
Right. Now, here's the thing, because, you know, I grew up, you know, like I said before, off air, I played very bad rugby for several years. And, you know, and rather than one of the glory boys, I, of course, was a hooker because I just, because I have the face for it. And the tactical thing was a game of you grab the scrum, you rumble forward, as was basically the England pack during the 80s, and you keep going until it gets pulled down or so-and-so, right? And now, obviously, in international rugby, that does not happen. And I was just thinking, because occasionally I do on a Friday, I mean, I was lucky enough to go to Twickenham for the Cross Codes match between Bath and Wigan, of course. And that was where, that would be 1996, bloody hell. Anyway, sorry, listeners. And we were amazed by two things. A, the fact that the Wigan supporters all turned up in their kit, right? But B, the physical fitness, because they unleashed Jason Robinson to us for the first time before he made the switch. And we were amazed by the speed and also the physical fitness. So did the introduction, because nothing exists in a vacuum, and the Union had traditionally looked down on league up until that point, pretty much so. But blimey, league has made a huge impact on the way that rugby players train, the tactics, the coaches, the whole cross code thing has gone out the window now.
Yeah, absolutely. So a few years ago, maybe 10 or so years ago, it was very fashionable to try and bring rugby league players over to Union. But there wasn't a huge amount of success, obviously Jason Robinson aside, wasn't a huge amount of success in terms of getting league players into Union and having them reproduce their former levels. However, where there has been success is in the training and in bringing coaches over. So there's a lot of coaches now in Union who were defence coaches in league or were strength and conditioning coaches in league. And really the level, or the goal, was to bring the level of fitness and the level of skill and the level of defensive ability up to where it was in league, because league got the head start in going professional. Union was languishing behind, and Union kind of poached really the great minds from league to improve its defences, which had the knock-on effect of the defence got so good that in order to counter that, the attack had to improve, which is why I believe we are living in the best era of rugby that you can have.
But purists would go, but the problem is, you see, Sam, the problem is that, you know, basically Union has become almost an off, you know, because we don't want basketball rugby like what those All Blacks play, you know, flinging the ball around, you know, willingly. It's not the Harlem Bleeding Globetrotters, etc. And rugby, you know, as they shuffle off into their short wheelbase Land Rover Defenders with their chocolate Labradors called Toby or something, muttering into their barbers. But, you know, it's you know, because the scrum needs to be maintained, etc., and that's what keeps it away from those northern upstarts. And one of the things that we have seen is the rules of scrummaging have always been a dark art, but we've also seen, which I, you know, you never used to see, the cross kick, because we were always told, keep the ball, whatever you do, do not kick the ball away. And now the appreciation of space that the modern rugby player has, like a scrum half, will look, pump it out, and then somebody will look and see the space that, you know, you and I would never have seen sort of 20 years ago. And the cross kick and that waiting for the ball on the try line, the basketball leap and down, has been a revolution in the game.
Yeah, it really has been. There's so much stuff now that even 5 years ago would have been, you know, gone Instagram viral or Facebook viral or whatever it might be, which is now just a normal part of the game. You know, I remember Sonny Bill Williams, would that being back 12 years ago or so, doing the flicks out the back door for the offloads. And that was kind of, this is unbelievable, this is impossible that someone can do that. Now you'll see 7, 8, 9 of those each game. The cross kicks, again, a few years ago, you might see one or two Six Nations. Now you'll probably see one or two a game. So these kind of, this skill level, and you see this in all sports, really, you know, someone breaks down the barrier and then suddenly everyone else has the confidence or the ability to go and do that same thing. And that's been what's kind of supercharged rugby's growth. So yeah, those skills are just so impressive now, and they just you know, they're lamping up and they're becoming so common across the game.
But this is the thing about professionalism, because you have players who now can train professionally, because again, I'm going back to my generation, 95, 96, we'd only just, you know, we had charitarism, like the South Africans were all doing something, and if you're an England player, you had a job in an investment bank, Peter Winterbottom stand up, and you know, but you didn't actually do anything, but you couldn't really, you had to show up to the office now and again. But now, of course, we have professional training, nutritionists, and data has become a big thing. So it's not just we do this game plan because it works for us no matter who the opponent is. You now, if you're playing Tonga, it's an entirely different situation of data than if you're playing France.
Yeah, absolutely. So the key with the data and with the analysis is that either you want to double down on what you think is your best way of playing, and we probably all experience this where you might get a sense of moments and you might kind of extrapolate those moments out. So, for example, you might have a situation where you remember someone making a big tackle and you might go, they're the fantastic tackler, you know, because they make that one big tackle, they're the wonderful tackler. But the data might show, well, yeah, they do make some big tackles, but they also miss a lot of tackles. And with what, so what the data is trying to do is it's just trying to show exactly what's going on out there. And with Tonga, for example, you might want to play your own way and who cares about who the opposition are, or you might decide, well, what we're going to do is we're going to move them away from how they want to play. And we're going to make them spend 80 minutes playing in a way that they haven't trained for. And that's been one of the key developments of having data analysis in the game. It allows people to force their opponents into a completely different game style.
Because if you've got quite a heavy team, and good morning, my Tonganese friends, you want to be throwing the ball around and make them run out of puff, basically, don't you, for 80 minutes.
Or
failing that, just rile them up because they're known for perhaps losing their heads now and again.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You want to, I mean, South Africa as well, who've got a massive team, they want to slow the game down as much as possible. So that means set pieces where they can walk to the line outs, where they can walk to the scrums. If you take that away from them, if you kick to keep on the pitch, it forces them to play for 80 minutes.
But you see, South Africa completely turned the game on its head. The bomb squad. We hadn't thought about this before. That is taking this is almost like what Formula One engineers do, and they find the loophole. And so you used to be a time, you know, they'd straggle on you. You know, two or three had come on, or one or two at a time substitutes, and that was fine because somebody was getting tired. And then suddenly South Africa decided to release the bomb squad. Explain, Sam, what the bomb squad is.
Yes, so you have eight players on a bench now in professional rugby. And there's a requirement, a slightly boring requirement, that you have to have three of them who can cover the front row. Mm-hmm. So you have to have three forwards, but then obviously that leaves you with five and you can play five wherever. What South Africa increasingly are doing, they started with a 6-2, so six forwards, two backs. And then they push that to the extremes of a 7-1. I think, I believe it was injury impacted, but they've also gone for an 8-0. So no backs on the bench. And what that allows you to do is, and what they tend to do with the bomb squad is after about 55, 60 minutes, change more or less the entire forward pack. So this forward pack that's been dominating for the first hour, who are now starting to look a little bit leggy, off they come, on come, basically at the same level of forward. And then if you're the opposition, especially if you're weaker than the scrum, it must be the most dispiriting thing in the world to see these seven or eight completely new forwards, all fresh, all kind of, you know, frothing at the mouth to come on to destroy you more than the scrum.
And they see, this is the thing, because we have South Africa also changed how we look at the last 10 minutes of rugby match. It used to be sort of clinging on, didn't it? It was, you know, everybody used to be on the edge of their seats going, you know, can they make it? Tired legs out there, etc. Now, the last 15 minutes of rugby international are edge of your seat, because the game isn't over until, and teams are now playing. I mean, South Africa are masters of this. They are the masters, as we saw in the last World Cup, of the 1-point victory. And they might be losing for 75 minutes of the 80, but by thunder, somehow they've perfected the trick of getting that final score in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we do probably overstate the importance of those last 15, 10, 15 minutes, you know, because you could lose a game in the first 5 minutes and then you could be kind of coming back into it. But absolutely, if you can stay in the match and then you've got fresher legs in the last 10 minutes. That is where the mistakes come. Fatigue plays a massive part. You know, penalties that you might otherwise have kicked to the corner, you now have a chance to kick over for the three match-winning points. So that kind of last 10 minutes, if you can be fresh for those last 10 minutes, it makes such a massive difference. And it's key, especially as we see more and more teams and more and more matches decided by fewer points.
Mm. Here's the thing. VAR, yeah? In rugby now, we all have various things about that, but and here comes from the Ministry of the Bleeding Obvious. Rugby is a contact sport, okay? Yes. You know, the aim of rugby is to get rid of, and you know, especially if you're playing at my level, to get rid of all your week's aggression on a Saturday morning and a muddy playing field near Feltham. But the problem with VAR in rugby to some extent is the fact that when you slow down the contacts that happen within, you know, in rugby from various angles, they look far, far worse and intentional than actually in the, you know, in real time, in the heat of the moment. Has that sort of changed, do you think, the way that teams prepare? Because they are, and I'm not talking about, you know, somebody getting an eye gouge, because that's off full stop, you know. But yeah, the and again, spear tackles, you know, good morning to the All Blacks, Brian O'Driscoll. But, you know, that sort of, we're not talking about foul play, but players have to be, and coaches and, you know, and data technicians have to be aware that certain angles of attack, shall we say, that would have been glossed over by the ref, etc., or, you know, in real time, they have to be well aware of that, because this is what's happening on a rugby pitch, and it can be brought back at VAR, and therefore it looks far, far worse than perhaps intended.
Yeah, it is a concern, especially because as we have more focus now on head contact, and you know, it was always impossible to know whether something was intentional or not. It's now, I think they found quite a nice balance recently, where there's a lot of understanding about the challenges that defenders face. So, for example, the situation is so dynamic that if you're, and a lot of teams are trying to make double tackles where there's two people making the tackle, which again is something that's come from the rugby league. So if one person makes a hit and that impacts the ball carrier, which means that they drop or they go up or they go left or they go right, and the second player comes in and suddenly they're trying to tackle this moving object, and you know, they might go high or whatever it might be. I think there's a little bit more understanding about that and a bit more acceptance that, you know what, we're going to let this one slide because there's nothing that could have really been done about that. But yeah, I think it's a concern, because the problem is obviously head injuries are such a big issue and such a big deal that it becomes difficult to just let them slide whilst at the same time fairly penalising them.
This could be a very dry book, you know, data and angles of attack and, you know, the ball carry, etc. But you've brilliantly taken some of the most outstanding matches in the past 20 years to illustrate the point. Now, you know, I am blessed with the fact that I was born in England, my mother was from Scotland, and my father is Welsh, from the Rhondda Valley, he's from Treorchy. So you can imagine what growing up as a child during the Five Nations was like. One of my earliest memories is my Welsh grandfather calling me from the Cardiff Arms Park going, "We stuffed you." I was about six at the time. But we're looking at the you know, Wales versus England, and it's 2008, and that ridiculous comeback.
Yes. Yes, that was a wonderful experience for me, because I'm Welsh. So, yeah, very happy memories of that. That was also the first game that Warren Gatland and Sean Edwards, who would then go on to form the core unit of Welsh coaching, took on. That first half, they fell away to England. The second half was really the start of this incredibly stout defence.
Sean Edwards, you see, now there is a man. Wigan, of course.
Yeah.
Complete psychopath, bless him.
Yeah.
But also one of the most successful crossovers from league and into union in a coaching sense, because he's revolutionised the way that defence is looked at.
Yeah, absolutely. His whole mantra is to apply pressure kind of wherever you are on the pitch. And defensively, you know, that's possibly overlooked. Certainly when I was starting playing, you know, you would just tackle who was in front of you. Where there's now the idea of plotting the downfall of an attack and applying that constant and unrelenting pressure. You know, England, Wales at their best, and now France at their best, there as an attack, or if you're watching on, even on telly where you can see the whole picture, you just don't know where the space is. You're just constantly trying to work out where Sean Edwards has left a hole, and he never seems able to have done one. He never seems able to have left a weakness. And so that unremitting pressure has forced attacks to change how they approach the game, get more skillful, as we spoke about earlier, with the offloads, with the cross kicks, and try and exploit just that tiniest of gap that might be out there.
And of course, you know, we're talking during an international, which is mayhem. I mean, you know, like I said, we've both played rugby at a certain level, and half the time you know, you're trying to get breath, you're trying to work out what's going on, you're trying to pull your socks up. And so the modern game requires a level of rugby intelligence, perhaps, that wasn't before. I mean, before, you know, I was listening to a podcast with Dylan Richards, and he literally used to stop his shift, you know, as a policeman, have a fag, you know, and then go on the pitch, basically. And still, I mean, back in the old days, but now you have to be able to think concisely. And this isn't, you know, like I said, this isn't a game of chess. At the same time, there is somebody rumbling towards you, intent to do you serious physical damage.
Yes, absolutely. It's one of the challenges when people say, you know, players should just play what they see, and they're being overcoached and that kind of thing. The fact is, in the international, as you say, you have almost no time on the ball. You have no time to get the ball, to look up, to see where the space is. At the level that I play at, you can catch the ball, you can look where the space is, and you can play into it. If you did that in international, you would be hit so hard.
Stand Z, you'd be in rows east, you know, on the top tier by the time you got the ball.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that that pressure and the difficulty that defences, or the challenge that defences pose, mean that you do have to train to anticipate rather than just fully the act. You have to know what is likely to come at you and know how you can react to that.
Now, one of the great for the neutrals amongst us, one of the great rugby contests is always France versus the All Blacks, because of the style they play. Because when they cut loose, 'tis a thing of beauty, Sam. So why did you pick the 2023 France All Blacks match?
Yeah, so interestingly, that one was looking more at kicking, because, as you say, they have this, they typically will cut loose and they typically will play with bowling hand. In that game, possibly because it was the first game of the World Cup, possibly because they were both a bit nervous about showing their hands and both expected to make a decent run of it, they kicked, I believe it was more than any other match in that World Cup. They just didn't really want possession. They wanted to kick it back and forth to one another. It was still an enjoyable match, and some of those kicks were, you know, cross kicks and attacking kicks, but it was really that kind of relentless, this is how we're going to break the team down, and we don't want to show off too much of what we're doing.
You see, and that is the thing about, that is the beauty about the Noble game, is because sometimes it can be, oh, just give it to Lomo and he'll just run over England team, right? And sometimes it can be that grind, you know, give it to the England pack and they will grind, they will work their way forward. But sometimes you've got a Serge Blanco, you know, you've got a Sandre, you've got the French doing what the French do, Dupont doing what he does. And you just think, my goodness, this isn't a game, this is a work of art. But you can appreciate them for each aspect. It's not like, oh, just, you know, for the association football, there are so many different things you can bring to that game. There is no one way of, you know, you can't just park the bus, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you kind of learn why teams are doing that and learn to appreciate it, it means that more or less every single game that you watch has got something coming out within it. You know, whether it's Bristol Bears v Bulls a couple of weeks ago, where it was, whatever it was, 52-48, or whether it's a hard fought, you know, 9-6 in the wet in Newcastle.
That was how I used to play.
Something to like.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. There's something to like about every single match that is going on, as long as you're willing to kind of look below the surface and see what the teams are actually trying to do rather than just purely what is visible.
What are you hoping that people are going to learn from Attack the Space, Sam?
Yeah, so I really want them to get a newfound love for rugby, I think. I think there's a lot of casual fans in the game, and a lot of people who, over the next month or so, will tune in to maybe their five or six games they watch a year. And what I want those people to realise is, underneath that beautiful surface that gets us all into the pub on a Saturday and a Sunday, there is so much going on. And if you know what's going on, if you learn what's going on, the game is so much better for it.
The book is called Attacking the Space. It's by Sam Lilas. Sam, if people want to follow you on the socials or online, where's the best place to track you down?
Yeah, so at Sam L stands up on Twitter, X, Blue Sky, and samlarney.substack.com if you want to have a look at some longer form ideas about rugby and its future direction.
Sam Lilas, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.